Welcome to the Federal Society's Practice Group podcast. The following podcast, hosted by the Federal Society's Criminal Law and Procedure Practice Group, was recorded on Tuesday, November 28, 2017, during a live Courthouse Steps teleforum conference call held exclusively for Federal Society members.
Welcome to the Federal Society's teleforum conference call. This afternoon, we will be discussing Digital Realty Trust, Inc. v. Somers, which was heard today in the Supreme Court. My name is Wesley Hodges, and I'm the Associate Director of Practice Groups at the Federal Society. As always, please note that all expressions of opinion are those of our expert on today's call. Today, we are fortunate to have with us Todd Brownstein, who is Global Head of Legal Investigations at Willis Towers Watson. After Todd gives his remarks, we'll move to an audience Q&A. So as we are discussing the case, please have those questions in mind. Thank you for speaking with us, Todd. The floor is now yours.
Thanks very much, Wes. Earlier today, the Supreme Court heard oral arguments in Digital Realty Trust versus Somers. This case addressed an issue about the scope of whistleblower protections that divided the circuits over the last few years. The specific question in the case is whether the whistleblower protections included in the Dodd-Frank Act from 2010 cover only those individuals who make a report to the Securities and Exchange Commission, or whether they also cover those who make a complaint just internally to their supervisors. This is a question of significant practical consequence for those who deal with whistleblowers. That's because a very large percentage of corporate whistleblowers try to resolve their concerns internally before going to the SEC. While internal whistleblowers do enjoy protections under the Sarbanes-Oxley Act, the Dodd-Frank provisions are more generous in a variety of ways. So those are really the practical stakes for this case. The heart of the legal issue is how Congress used the term whistleblower in the retaliation provisions of the Dodd-Frank law. In Section 922 of Dodd-Frank, Congress set forth a two-pronged approach for, quote, securities whistleblower incentives and protection, unquote. The first prong was a new financial award program. And under this program, a whistleblower who provides information to the SEC, results in a successful enforcement action, can receive a percentage of the SEC's monetary recovery. The second prong was a new cause of action protecting, quote, whistleblowers against retaliation by their employers. Now, this cause of action extends only to quote, whistleblowers, and Congress included the definition of that term earlier in the same section. And under that definition, a whistleblower is anyone who provides information about a violation of the securities laws to the SEC. And so the argument presented by the petitioner, Digital Realty Trust, is pretty much a straightforward syllogism, application of the statutory text. Dodd-Frank specifically says you need to go to the commission, to the SEC, to qualify as a whistleblower. The anti-retaliation cause of action only protects whistleblowers. Therefore, the anti-retaliation provision only protects those who report to the commission, full stop. And it doesn't cover anybody who makes a whistleblower complaint internally or to any other agency for that matter. In addition, Digital Realty Trust pointed to the structure of this provision of Dodd-Frank. As I mentioned earlier, the section does two things. It creates an incentive for reporting to the SEC in the form of financial awards. And second, it protects individuals from retaliation for going to the SEC. And those two provisions complement each other and work hand in glove together. And they explain why Congress limited the anti-retaliation provision as it did, or at least that was how Digital Realty Trust argued. The respondent, Mr. Somers, argued that the textual syllogism that I mentioned a few minutes ago isn't quite so simple. He downplayed the notion that a statutorily defined term automatically carries the statutory definition. Instead, he urged the court to use other interpretive tools that he said supported the view that Dodd-Frank protected a broader range of plaintiffs, including those who report internally. Now, in setting forth the proposition that a defined term doesn't always and automatically mean or carry the statutory definition, Somers is joined by no less committed a textualist than Justice Scalia. In the book Reading Law, which the late Justice co-authored in 2012 with Brian Garner, Justice Scalia wrote that statutory definitions are just one indication of meaning, a very strong indication to be sure, but nonetheless one that can be contradicted by other indications. So in this case, Somers tried to identify a number of other indications that the term whistleblower was broader than the statutory definition. And the most important of those indications is really the third clause of the anti-retaliation cause of action. And this clause protects whistleblowers who make disclosures that are required or protected under a wide range of laws, including Sarbanes-Oxley. And that wide range of laws includes, among others, those that direct certain individuals, such as auditors and attorneys, to report their concerns internally. In some cases, making that internal report is a prerequisite before you can go to the SEC. And in other cases, such as with attorneys who have attorney-client confidentiality obligations, reporting internally is the only option available. So that raises, given that the Dodd-Frank cause of action specifically protects such disclosures, it raises the question of how could Congress have offered protection for such disclosures that are made under laws that direct individuals to make internal reports, only to withdraw such protections except for those who report externally. And that tension disappears if you conclude that the anti-retaliation provision actually didn't intend to invoke the defined term whistleblower. Instead, the argument is that in this anti-retaliation provision, Congress used the whistleblower in a colloquial sense to employees who make complaints, whether internally, whether to the SEC, or whether to other relevant bodies, and not in the narrower sense set forth in the statutory definitions. Somers also argued that applying the statutory definition of whistleblower would leave the cause of action exceedingly narrow. If you apply the definition in Dodd-Frank, the only plaintiffs who get protection are those who report both internally to their company and externally to the SEC, but are disciplined by their employer only for the internal report. That's obviously a very narrow class of plaintiffs, and more importantly, it makes liability turn that employers are generally going to be unaware of. The employee also went to the SEC. So one employee who complained but didn't go to the SEC would be unprotected, but the second employee who did make a complaint and also went to the SEC, who also complained internally and then went to the SEC also, would be protected. So the obvious response to that is that and creating a narrow class of plaintiffs is not a sufficient service rewriting the statute, and that's that Digital Realty Trust made at length. In making his arguments, Somers had some powerful support in the form of the federal government. In 2011, the SEC issued a rule that interpreted the anti-retaliation provisions in exactly the way that Somers suggests, that is, covering whistleblowers who report internally. For that reason, Somers argued that this case fits into the familiar Chevron framework, whereby a court will defer to an agency's reasonable interpretation of a statutory ambiguity. In response to that, the petitioner Digital Realty Trust spent significant energy attacking the SEC rule as unworthy of deference. In particular, the company noted that the SEC had initially proposed defining a whistleblower as an individual that provides information to the SEC, just as the statutory definition says, but then reversed course in its final rule. Digital Realty Trust argued that the proposed rule didn't give fair notice that the SEC was considering this change in definition, and moreover, that when they promulgated the final rule, the SEC didn't adequately explain the decision to reverse course. For his part, Somers argued that Digital Realty Trust launched this procedural attack on the rule far too late in the litigation. And he argued more generally that the procedural aspects of the SEC rule had not really been passed on by the lower courts. So the Supreme Court should not take them up in this matter for the first time. And Somers also argued that the procedural attack was wrong on the merits. Another important aspect of this case is how the Dodd-Frank anti-retaliation cause of action fits with Congress's broader program, and that includes most notably Sarbanes-Oxley, which unequivocally protects those who report internally to a supervisor. The new Dodd-Frank action is more powerful, as I mentioned, than Sarbanes-Oxley in several ways. It offers double back pay rather than single back pay. Dodd-Frank has a significantly longer statute of limitations, and Dodd-Frank permits plaintiffs to file suit directly in federal court, where Sarbanes-Oxley has a requirement that first file a complaint with the department. Digital Realty Trust argued that the breadth of the Dodd-Frank remedy explained why Congress wanted a narrow class of plaintiffs that could use it. It pointed to evidence that during the debate over Sarbanes-Oxley, that Congress had specifically rejected a stronger cause of action for fear of inviting frivolous lawsuits. So it argued that to construe Dodd-Frank to protect all internal complainants and give them the powerful procedural tools that Dodd-Frank created would upset the balance between Dodd-Frank and Sarbanes-Oxley, giving plaintiffs those procedural advantages that Congress had specifically withheld in Sarbanes-Oxley. And indeed, he argued that the broader construction of Dodd-Frank, protecting all whistleblowers, internal and external, would basically render Sarbanes-Oxley obsolete. The petitioner Somers argued that the narrower construction would actually frustrate the overall statutory scheme. Sarbanes-Oxley's chief focus is internal compliance and internal reporting, so a rule only external whistleblowers would undercut that law's focus. And for its part, Dodd-Frank was intended to provide incentives for whistleblowers to go to the SEC, including through the financial reward program I mentioned earlier. However, reporting internally is sometimes a legal prerequisite to reporting externally. And just as importantly, as a practical matter, many whistleblowers do report internally before they go to the SEC. In fact, 80% of plaintiffs who received payments under the SEC award program last year had reported their complaints internally first. So for this reason, Somers argues that the failure to protect internal whistleblowers would severely impede Dodd-Frank's statutory scheme. So those are the issues in the case. Today at oral argument, my view is that the justices were generally more sympathetic to Digital Realty Trust than they were to Somers. Justice Gorsuch, not surprisingly, was particularly vocal in emphasizing the textual argument. At one point, he asked how much clearer Congress could have been in expressing its intent that the defined or applied in the cause of action. Justice Roberts and Justice Alito both emphasized that there should be a very high bar before the court disregards a statutorily defined term, not merely that a contrary interpretation would create an anomaly, more like that using the statutorily defined term would create an absurdity or would make a complete mess of a statute. And several justices also downplayed the significance of excluding internal whistleblowers from the Dodd-Frank cause of action. Justice Breyer, Justice Sotomayor, and Justice Gorsuch all at various points that internal whistleblowers were carved out from Dodd-Frank, they wouldn't be left unprotected. They would still have the Sarbanes-Oxley remedy. On Somers' side, Justice Kagan and Justice Sotomayor both seemed concerned about an anomaly created by excluding internal whistleblowers. In particular, the view that liability would be contingent on whether an internal whistleblower had made a separate report to the SEC that the employer probably wouldn't even know about. Even so, when she was quizzing the government, Justice Kagan acknowledged that though that was an odd reading of the statute, she expressed skepticism that that oddity was sufficient to overcome the defined term. Finally, one of the most notable aspects of oral arguments, one that has broader ramifications in the court's jurisprudence potentially, was a line of questioning from Justice Gorsuch regarding whether the rule should receive Chevron deference. Justice Gorsuch identified several procedural infirmities with the rule that I talked about a few minutes ago. There was no fair notice that the SEC was considering expanding the rule to cover internal whistleblowers. The rule didn't attempt to explain or justify its position. And yet, he pointed out that two circuit courts nevertheless thought it was appropriate to defer to the rule. And Justice Gorsuch said this made no sense. It was an example of an agency basically swallowing legislative and judicial power. And Justice Gorsuch has made no secret, of course, of his views that agencies receive too much deference in American law, and seems there's little doubt that he'll write separately in this case to highlight those issues, given that he raised them several times in oral argument. The oral argument the Realty Trust will prevail, and that the court will exclude purely internal whistleblowers from the Dodd-Frank cause of action. Later on this term, in the meantime, I'll take any questions you might have.
Great. Let's go ahead and move to audience questions then. In a moment, you'll hear a prompt indicating that the floor mode has been turned on. After that, to request the floor, please enter the star key and then the pound key on your telephone. While we wait for audience questions, Todd, focusing on our newest justice, how did the government respond to Justice Gorsuch's attack on the SEC rule?
You know, it's interesting. The government, in its brief, really didn't rely very much on Chevron. In oral argument, Justice Gorsuch did raise the issue, attacked the various aspects of the rule, and the government did defend the rule, but Justice Gorsuch was trying to pin down the government attorney, and he said, at one point he asked the government, well, you know, suppose it's the case that there wasn't fair notice and the rule did not have there's no argument of a logical outgrowth and the agency didn't provide an adequate explanation. Assume all those things to be true. And in that, would such a rule be entitled to deference? And the government attorney basically answered that question, no, it would not be entitled to deference. And Justice Breyer was very alarmed by this answer. And he immediately jumped in and said, you know, I'd be very, very careful about the ramifications of making that concession. I take it that this is not a concession for all time, Mr. Government Attorney. And the government attorney immediately backtracked and said, yes, I agree, it's not a concession for all time. Obviously, it was something that recognized may have been potentially ill-considered. It probably won't have an impact overall on this case, but it certainly does. It was an example of Gorsuch is going, and was a notable exchange during the argument itself.
We'll have time for any last questions people might have. Just enter the star key and the pound key before we get to the last request. Todd, is there anything that you would like to comment on before we end the call today?
Nothing beyond what I've said, other than to thank the Federal Society for inviting me and appreciate the opportunity.
Wonderful. Well, just a couple more moments. This is your last chance. Enter the star key and the pound key. Oh, looks like we have an audience question. Let's turn to the person.
Hi, this is Jordan Lawrence, and I came late to the call, so if you've answered this, please bear with me. Did you have a sense that the majority was leaning one way or the other on favoring either the petitioner or the respondent? And then the other thing, when you were mentioning Justice Gorsuch bringing up the Chevron issue, did you feel like he was trying to, I know that this has been a big issue for him, and that he was trying to shoehorn in an issue that the rest of the justices didn't really want to address, at least with this case? Thank you.
Thanks. So on the first question, a sense the court was leaning towards digital realty trust, and that's always make predictions, but if oral argument is that
repeat what you're saying? We're having a little interference.
Okay, is that better?
Yes, thank you.
Okay. My statement is that the court was favoring petitioner, and if oral argument is the that's how the case is going to end up with a decisive majority. With Justice Gorsuch and the Chevron issue, the Chevron issue was discussed in detail in the briefs. You know, it was a significant what the petition. My surprise, I know that Justice Gorsuch, of course, has made no secret of his interest in these issues. To the extent the justices weighed in, they actually sympathetic to what he was saying. Justice Breyer actually made Gorsuch went through what he regarded as Justice Breyer didn't.
Sorry, Todd. Regarded as what?
Somers, his attorney, was really addressing the issue, and so he chimed in to help Justice Gorsuch and emphasize, underscored the question that he was asking. I think obviously Justice Gorsuch is the one who focused most on this, but I think the other justices to the claims.
Thank you. Caller, do you have any follow-up question or something that wasn't clearly articulated that you would like answered?
No, that's fine. Thank you.
Wonderful. Thank you. Well, one last chance. If you'd like to ask a question, please enter the star key and then the pound key. Let's move to our next audience question.
I came a little late to the call, too, but it seems to me that if the whistleblower is not given some relief on this, that the message is don't have anybody tell the company that they're doing something wrong because the person who's blowing the whistle internally to try to get the company to stop getting themselves in trouble is easily fired and best fired rather than keeping them around to cause trouble and generate a report that they're not going to want.
Well, I think that's a reason why this case doesn't break down neatly to pro business versus pro plaintiff. I think a lot of the business community really values the opportunity to address these issues internally. It's something that was certainly much commented upon during the SEC rulemakings in this area. That having been said, the chambers did weigh in on the side of Digital Realty Trust against extending the protections for internal whistleblowers. What they said, and I think what Digital Realty Trust would say, is internal whistleblowers do get protections under Sarbanes-Oxley, so those protections are not going away. The difference is that the Dodd-Frank more general, double back pay, 6-year statute of limitations, and that it would tip the balance far too much towards plaintiffs if you extended the Dodd-Frank tools to internal whistleblowers. But I agree, and I think it's not a clear-cut issue, and there is definitely something to be said for the argument that the stronger you make those internal protections, the more likelihood the company is going to have a chance to address it before the plaintiff goes running to the SEC.
Caller, do you have any follow-up question or something that needs to be articulated?
No, I think he answered the question. Of the syllables I heard, I thought it was an answer.
Yeah, and just to repeat all I was saying is I think that innovation that definitely has merit is not a business versus plaintiff case, that there is a lot to be said for providing strong protections for internal whistleblowers as a way of channeling complaints internally, that's something business can get behind, so that you don't have plaintiffs thinking they need to run to the SEC in order to get their concerns. So hopefully the connection was better there.
Yes, it was. Yes. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you, caller, for your question. Well, Tom, do you have any final thoughts you'd like to say?
Nope, nothing further.
Wonderful. Well, on behalf of the Federalist Society, I'd like to thank Todd for the benefit of his valuable time and expertise today. We welcome all listener feedback by email at info@fedsoc.org. Thank you all for joining us today. This call is now adjourned.
Thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed this Practice Group podcast. For materials related to this podcast and other Federalist Society multimedia, please visit the Federalist Society's website at fedsoc.org/multimedia.